Okay, first, let me just remind you, in the classical physics, we start with the concept of state, which actually, for example, for one particle, it can be a position and a momentum. It is described by two real numbers. So we use two real numbers, or an even number of real numbers to describe a state. And to describe a dynamics, we can either use a Hamiltonian or use a phase-based Lagrangian. And this essentially encodes the equation motion and also energy. Okay. So this basically the essence of classical physics, a state and how state evolve in time. Basically, that's answer two questions. However, in quantum theory, we somehow have very different picture. You know, it's very natural to describe a particle. We can use a position and a velocity to describe a state of a particle. But somehow, such a description turns out to be incorrect. And so actually, to describe a particle, even to describe a particle, we have to use a vector in a vector space or Hilbert space to describe a state. So this is a very counterintuitive, and everybody learned quantum mechanics, but here I just emphasize how counterintuitive it is. But somehow is the state became a vector in the vector space. And actually to describe even a particle in one dimension, the vector space is infinite dimensional vector space for some reason. Okay. And then, I think the real change is really the concept state is changed a lot. But once we specify a state, the dynamics will be very similar. We have some kind of Schrödinger equation. It's kind of like this Hamiltonian equation. It's a first order differential equation. Okay. And the Schrödinger equation now is determined by, or maybe let me write in the component form. So NNM. So it's characterized by a Hamiltonian, a big matrix. And but here I want to emphasize that we can also use a phase-based Lagrangian to describe the same equation motion. Yes?
Sorry, why did the higher vector have many wave functions in it? Why not?
Oh, this is not a wave function, this is a component, I'm sorry. This is a psi 1, 2, 3, I just component.
Okay, but in
they are complex number. This is a vector, so. Maybe let me use it. I think this is let me use the capital sign. So this is a vector for psi 1, 2, and psi 4 are complex numbers.
Energy basis.
So this psi, the little psi is a complex number. This big psi is a vector in the Hilbert space. So this is actually quite surprising. You know, to describe a single particle in one dimension, we just need two real numbers in classical physics. But somehow, in the quantum physics, we suddenly require an infinite number of complex numbers to characterize a single particle state in one dimension. But this dynamics, we can use this Hamiltonian phase-based Lagrangian to describe the Schrödinger. Okay. So that gave us the dynamics. And okay, so this is basically a kind of a general setup for quantum mechanics. However, as I mentioned, in this class, we need to deal with Hamiltonian with many particles. So even for the a single particle in one dimension, we already deal with a matrix of infinite dimension. If you have an n particle in three dimension, you have even bigger matrix to deal with. So it's hard for us to find the ground state and the energy eigenvalue of this big matrix. It's really difficult. So here we'll use a so-called semi-classical approach. What we do is that we turn a quantum theory, we turn a quantum system. Into a classical system. So this is general strategy. And then we can simplify the classical system. Even a simpler one. And then we turn this simplified classical system into a quantum system. And then here, in this last quantum system, we can analyze the matrix, find the ground state and eigenvalue, etc. Then we claim that the eigenvalue and the eigenstate of this simplified quantum system would approximate the first quantum system. So that's the basic strategy of a semi-classical approach. So the bottom line is that we want to know the lowest energy eigenvalue and maybe the other eigenvalue near the ground state, low-lying excitations. And but how we do that, we turn that into a classical system, we simplify the classical system here, then we train the quantum system. The simplification usually is easier. Because usually for the classical system, for example, for one dimensional classical system, it can be any potential. But however, the ground state, the classical system will be here. That's the minimum, potential minimum. And the low excitation of the classical system are just a vibration near the minimums. So they are oscillators. So that's how we do it. We have a quantum system, which gives us generic classical system. The low-lying excitation of this classical system only see the harmonic potential here, so it became oscillators, harmonic oscillators. Then we can turn the harmonic oscillator into a quantum system and solve this quantum system, which in terms of harmonic oscillators. So this works, this usually works. Okay. But sometimes this approach doesn't work. Where it doesn't work is actually in the so-called a critical point. You know, when you have a quantum system, you are in some phase. It's like in the liquid phase or crystal phase. Usually in the phase, deep into the phase, this approach works. But when you tune a parameter to have a phase transition, say, between the liquid phase and the solid phase, right at the critical point, this one breaks down. The reason this breaks down is that we can no longer simplify the classical system into a simpler classical system, i.e., in terms of oscillators. And this oscillator approximation breaks down, and then things become difficult. But away from critical point, this approach works pretty well. Okay, so to really demonstrate this strategy, so we'll consider a very simple a system as an example, and later we'll consider the more complicated system. So the very simple system we want to consider is given by this Hamiltonian. So where the A is a matrix,
etc. So this is the A matrix, and the B matrix, it's they all bend diagonal. So B, there's I here, so their diagonal is zero. Okay, so maybe it's easier to write this way. Then that's a minus one. So square root two minus square root two, and etc. Yeah, tri-diagonal. Both are tri-diagonal matrix. Okay. So actually, this is a really oscillator with a quartic potential. So A is like B is like a momentum square. This is a x squared. This x to the fourth. But I write this way, really, I try to emphasize that we are dealing with a matrix. So quantum mechanics is a matrix. We just deal with just this Hamiltonian matrix. So I give this matrix that define quantum system. And then we want to find the eigenvalue spectrum of the matrix. Usually it's hard. But then but what I emphasize here is that we want to find the ground state eigenvalue and maybe a few low-lying states. And the higher excited states are difficult, but we just want to get a low energy spectrum. How to get the low energy spectrum? So you emphasize on this part. So in a semi-classical approach, you know, to diagonalize this, so H is really infinity by infinity matrix. To diagonalize this big matrix directly is hard. So we'll use a semi-classical approach to do that. Okay. So how to do this semi-classical approach? So there's we'll discuss a two approach. One approach is the equation motion approach. Another approach is the coherent state approach. Okay. So in the equation motion approach, we try to identify some operators and then try to find the equation motion for the average of those operators. Okay. So the bottom line is that we can have some operators. Then the time derivative of the operator is given by I times H, the commutator of this. So in the Heisenberg picture. So the idea is that we identify some operators, then calculate their average. So for this operator, we have this average of the operator. And then we find the equation motion. What is the average of, what's the equation motion for this average of operators? Okay. So this is a correspond to the Hamiltonian equation I just write down. You know, Hamiltonian equation we write down is something like so those are classical equation motions. So we try to produce some equation motion which can mimic this kind of classic equation motion. Okay. And then we also supply the energy. Remember that if you know the equation motion, if you know the energy, you can identify what is the canonical coordinate, what is canonical momentum. Then we can quantize this classic equation again and to find some kind of approximate quantum system. So this is the general strategy. But certainly the key of the equation motion approach is to identify the operator. What operator do you want to use to build your equation motion? So this is a, then I don't have, at this stage, then I don't have a general guideline, you know, what operator. It's like a variational approach. How do you build a good variational wave function? So how to choose the operator properly is a key in how successful or how good approximation you can obtain using the equation motion approach. But so that requires you to understand this quantum system to certain levels, which allow you to identify the proper degree of freedom, which are responsible for the low-lying excitations. So these are the keywords. If you identify the proper degree of freedom which are responsible for the low-lying excitation, then you're using the operator associated with that degree of freedom to build your classical analog. Then that will give you a proper, maybe better approximation. And for this particular Hamiltonian, the way I write it really just suggests that let's use A and B, use two operators to build our equation motion. Okay. So we use this average A, average of A, and average of B operator to build our equation motion. So then we find this A dot is equal to I average this. Okay, it's this commutator. And A and B actually satisfy a following commutation relation. That's a design. By design, the AIB satisfied this commutation relation of coordinate and the momentum, basically. Okay. So therefore, using this commutation relation, we can evaluate the commutation commutator between H and A, where because so these two terms commute with A, this one do not commute with A, but this commutation relation give us B operator. So this commutator is B, and also which is the average of B. So this is very nice. Then similarly, we can calculate average of B, the B dot, the time derivative of B operator, just H B. And this one is more complicated, which is a minus V average of A operator minus average A operator cube. Okay. So this is usually a difficulty we are facing. This term, the first term is fine, it's A. But this term is a headache. So basically, really, equation motion don't close. Okay, and then we cannot proceed. You may say, okay, so let's name this A cube as some other array like AB, like C. They build the C dot, then eventually hope it's close, but usually they don't close. And you need to do some truncation or approximation. Here the approximation we made is that we assume this is a this is A cube. So this is an approximation. Just for the sole purpose to make the equation close. And so at really this stage is that if you choose your variable properly, this error is small, then it's more accurate. Okay. But anyway, so let's just go with it. So then that's it. So we have these two variable A and B, and we get a closed equation motion. The both are first order differential equation. So really it's kind of like this the phase space equation motion in classical system. Okay. And then the comment I made yesterday will be important here. You know, if you think this equation motion define a classical system, we may say, okay, let's simplify the classical system and quantize this classical system again. But to quantize this, we have difficulty we don't know whether, we know A and B are really the phase space variable because the equation motion for A and B is a first order. So that means the initial value problem, if you know A and B at a certain time, this knowledge will determine the whole evolution trajectory of A and B. But we have some difficulty to say what is the momentum, what is the coordinate here. So that's a difficulty we have. Okay, but however, I want to say that to answer that question, we need to supply this energy, the total energy, which is average of H. Again, average H is difficult because the average H is average B squared, A squared, and A cubed. So they are not really, it's not given by this A, you know, A and B variable. But again, we make some approximation. We think this average B squared is average B, then squared. We just ignore, we just make approximation like average B squared is equal to average B, then squared. If you're making this kind of similar approximation, then we find the energy just this B squared over 2 plus 1 half VA squared plus a quarter A cubed, or A to the fourth. So this is basically the equation motion approach. Yeah. We choose some operators to find the equation, close the equation for those operators with certain approximation. Then we hope that to express a total energy in terms of the variable, in terms of the average of the operator we choose. And then this equation motion plus this expression of energy determine the classical system. It even determine the what is the canonical momentum, what is canonical coordinate. And so we can quantize this. For this particular problem, it's very simple. If you rename this erase that. Yes?
That approximation that you made, doesn't it imply that uncertainty in B is zero? Or,
if that means, let's see, what do I say? Yeah, it means it's semi-classical. It means that the uncertainty of this B is not important.
Right.
So I think this is a very good question, and maybe in my next discussion, you'll see some of my uncertainty will be fully restored. So actually, if we call B P momentum and A x, then this equation motion is very familiar. It's the x dot equal to P and the P dot equal to minus x minus x cubed. And the energy is just P squared over M2 plus 1 times V x squared minus a quarter x cubed. So here you can see that this is really familiar classical system of a particle with a mass equal to 1, and this is potential. So in this case, A and B happen to be the canonical coordinate momentum cases. Because if you treat this as Hamiltonian, and this one can be written as indeed is a partial of H, partial of X, partial of T. and this is the minus, actually. So it happened to be, so this pair happened to be economic function, I can work. Okay, so then the next, so once you turn this quantum mechanical problem into the classical problem, then we can do some approximations. And we know that when we reach the zero, this potential, the classical potential for one particle, for this one dimensional particle, have only one minimum. If V less than zero, the potential is more complicated, have two minimums. So what is Guanxi energy? The Guanxi energy for the first case is zero. I mean classical Guanxi energy. So once we have this, we immediately find the following. Just minimize this energy, we find that so that the classical Guanxi energy, that's a T and X, is that's both equal to zero in V greater than zero. And the T equal to zero, but X equal to plus or minus, minus V, if V is less. So this minimal in the potential is a square root minus. So from here, we needed to obtain the Guanxi energy. So the Guanxi energy is simply Guanxi energy as function V is simply equal to zero and V greater than zero. And minus V squared over 4 is V less than zero. So that's the Guanxi energy. Now this is very simple, and if you realize this class analog, you can get this immediately. But here just illustrate that by using this classical system, by turning the quantum system into a classical system, and then finding the Guanxi energy of a classical system, you basically find approximate Guanxi energy for the quantum system. Just a question. Okay. However, let's try to do a better job. So what is a excitation? To obtain the excitation energy spectrum, we have to really turn this classical system into a quantum system again. Okay, but here with approximation, so we can see that. When V greater than zero, see we only want to, we're only interested in the low energy excitation, so we can only consider a small fluctuation around the ground state here. So that means we can ignore this x cube term. For positive V, we can ignore x cube for small fluctuation. Then this equation motion. And this energy, if you ignore this non-harmonic term, for positive V, became harmonic oscillator. Okay. So therefore, if you turn, so then we turn this harmonic oscillator into quantum system. So that gives us a simplified quantum system. And the oscillation frequency is pretty simple. The spirit constant is V, the mass is 1. So oscillation frequency actually is square root of V. So therefore, we say that for V greater than zero, the oscillation frequency omega is the square root of. And then the spectrum,
En is what? It's N times H bar. Here we take H bar equal to 1 always. So just N plus 1 half square root of V. Plus 0. The 0 is a classical Guangxi energy. OK, so that's it. But here we learn something here. That's related to your comment. That is, you can see the Guangxi energy for V greater than 0 is not really 0. It contains, it's 1 half square root of V. Contains a little bit of this quantum fluctuation. OK. So that's where we kind of put some quantum fluctuation back. OK. So this one should be modified. It's really 0 plus 1 half square root of V, if you include the quantum fluctuation. A little bit raised. OK. But for V less than 0, so this is a story about V greater than 0. And then the spectrum basically is this one. So that's a low energy spectrum. It's a square root of V, and N is the label. The Guangxi is 1 half V, and the next one is 1 plus 1 half square root of V, and et cetera. That's give us the low energy spectrum. OK. And actually, so in the lecture notes, there's a figure 2.5. And so that's really, it's plot those the first six energy levels. And the points actually is an exact diagonalization. And the solid line are really plotting is this curve. Is this curve. So basically, we find that if V is not too small, it works pretty well. Especially low energy, it works pretty well. But for V equal to 0, it's the whole thing collapses. You can see, for V equal to 0, this square root of V equal to 0. So all the energy collapsing to the 0. So that certainly is wrong. So for V equal to 0, this approximation is not so good. But for large V, it works pretty well. Yes?
In the original system, do we expect a phase transition of V equal to 0?
No. But this is a very, very good question, actually. In original system, it's a one-dimensional particle system. So we don't have a phase transition. But if you are talking about a higher dimensional system, I mean, the field with many degree of freedom, and then this observation is really, really good. So sometimes in the classical system, you can see the phase transition. And which such phase transition survive quantum fluctuation. Yeah. Since you mentioned this, I really want to let me go to this. This is a very important point. You can see in the quantum system we described here, as we change in V, there's no phase transition. And the energy level in the quantum system, basically, as a function of V, this energy En, is something like this. That's ground state, like this. The next excited state is this. Then become nearly degenerate. Then the third excited state is this. And then next line is become nearly degenerate. So we know that if V is very negative, we have two potential well trapped. So we have an oscillator here, and it can be either here or here. That gives us near twofold degeneracy. Okay, but however, as function of V, the Guangxi energy changes continuously. There's no singularity.
So that means no phase transition. Here I emphasize that. Usually, to see if you have a quantum transition or not, you just need to examine whether Gwangsi energy is a smooth function of a parameter or not. If you change your parameter, you find Gwangsi energy is have singularities, then that means you have a phase transition at the position of singularity. And for this particular system, it's very interesting. Let's ignore the quantum fluctuation, just ignore this first. The quantum system don't have singularity, but it's a classical simplification have singularity. It's here. 0 and the minus the square root v square 4. So classical theory is you have a 0 here, and then it's quadratic going moving down. So there's singularity. So this is an example that it's a classical analog have a singularity as you're changing v. As such singularity representing this symmetry breaking transition, actually. But in this case, quantum fluctuation is very strong. And such singularity is washed out in the quantum system. And it's no longer, no longer exists in quantum system. But however, there are situations, but this is a typical in low dimensional system. And also in the system with a few degree freedom. And later we will see that in the rotor model, in a system with infinite number of degree freedom, you can see this classical phase transition just like here. In this classic analog, you see the phase transition. And actually, this phase transition survives the quantum fluctuation. The quantum fluctuation do not destroy that. So actually, that's one of the main motivation to study semi-classical approximation. Because it's so much easier to see the phase transition in the classical analog. But certainly, sometimes you get a false positive, like in this case. In the classic analog, you would claim there's a phase transition. But in reality, they are not. And but on the other hand, the other way is almost impossible to do. To solve a quantum mechanical problem to show the Gwangsi energy has singularity at a certain parameter is almost impossible. And the reason is that for any finite system, the singularity simply do not exist. And you know, as a Hamiltonian, as a big matrix, for any finite with finite degree freedom, and the Gwangsi energy is always a smooth parameter of a smooth function of a parameter. Only when you take a thermodynamic limit, when degree of freedom getting bigger and bigger, then you may have I don't know how to draw it. Then you have a singularity developed. But the finite system, the singularity always round off by quantum fluctuation. So the proof that there is a phase transition in quantum using Hamiltonian or diagonalized matrix is very difficult. And so in condensed matter, we almost always finding a classical analog of the system and show that there is a phase transition in the classic system, then try to wave our hand and try to argue this phase transition survive the quantum fluctuation. But there are ways to show that. Okay, but this is a very good point. Okay, so because the classical system have phase transition, so that's why we have to discuss v greater than 0 and v less than 0 separately. Looks like there's a phase transition, although in quantum system there's no phase transition for this particular system. When v less than 0, and then what we have is that we have a oscillator here. Okay. Yeah, I will not carry through the calculation. It's a very similar calculation. It's just here we have curvature. The curvature is this v here. And But on this minimal, we also have harmonic potential, but it shifted a harmonic potential well. And the curvature is different. It turns out that I think the curvature is the curvature here is minus 2V. So that means the frequency is a minus a square root of minus 2V. So what I really mean is minus 2V is minus 2V is positive, so delta x squared. So this harmonic potential is minus 2V times delta x squared, basically, if you expand around here. And so therefore, the energy is equal to n plus 1 half and the square root minus 2V. And the plus is this minus V squared over 4. So for the ground state, so here we have 1 half square root of V. Here we have 1 half square root of minus 2V. So those are so this term are quantum fluctuations. Okay. And it turns out that this quantum, actually you can see that this is already interesting. You can see the quantum fluctuation are bigger than this classical contribution for small v. For small v, the classical contribution is like a v squared, but the quantum fluctuation is the square root of v. So that's a sign. When v is very small, quantum fluctuation is very big. So there's a possibility that the quantum fluctuation may kind of wash out this classical singularity. And actually, that's how we do it. And sometimes we can show that the quantum fluctuation is very weak and couldn't wash out this classical energy. Then the classical singularity survives. Then we really have a quantum phase transition. Yeah, so that's a trick. OK, so basically, this is one approach. Okay, any questions here? Yeah. So later we'll using this approach and to derive to handle the many body systems. But the philosophy is very similar. Using very similar philosophy to handle many body systems. Okay. So that's very simple. But the problem is that it's hard for me to produce the picture. As this figure 2.5 in lecture notes, we see that the near v equal zero, this equation motion approach behave pretty bad. It's a very bad approximation. Okay. So in the next, we'll try to develop another approach. We call the coherent state approach. Or maybe I try to say call that a variational approach. Or maybe dynamical variational approach. So what is the idea of the coherent state or variational approach? We know that using variational approach, we can obtain Gwangsi energy very easily. We just find the trial wave function. And if we design a very good trial wave function, we can obtain very good approximation to the Gwangsi energy. Okay. However, here we want to do more. Not only we want to know the Gwangsi energy just like this, not only we want to know the Gwangsi energy of the system, we also want to know the excitation. So for V greater than zero, we have this. For V less than zero, we have this. We want to know the spectrum. Then you may say that variational approach do not give you spectrum, only give you minimal energy states. But here I want to say that not quite, actually. In the variational approach, we can also get a spectrum in a similar spirit of this semi-classical approach. So let me explain why. So in the variational approach, usually we have variational parameters. For example, we have states. Okay? And we have a few variational parameters, let's call the Kc. Say Kc1, Kc2, and etc. So So maybe let's use this direct vector. So we have original parameters. Okay. So we choose the proper original parameter to obtain lowest energy ground states, or approximate ground states. But here we want to view original parameter differently. So how? Because obviously, if we for any given original parameter, we get a quantum state. We get a state. So why that is important? It's a original parameter really gave us a state. So it means that this pair of real number gave us a complete characterization of a state. And so means the state, they have a potential to, if you know the state at a given time, the whole time evolution history is determined. Okay. So that's a big clue. So this, we can view this as a point in phase space in the classical system. And that's a key. In the classical system, that once we give a point in phase space, then we get a complete calculation of a state. Means its time evolution history is determined by that information. But the variational parameter actually plays similar role. If it fix variational parameter, we fix quantum state. You know, even quantum state are fixed, certainly everything is fixed. So it's in this classic analog, we can treat this variational parameter as a point in phase space. The only thing we need to know is how to know, so that's a state. So once you get states, the next question, we just need to know the dynamics. So, yes?
Sorry, just wondering, if these are variational parameters, they should be continuous.
Yes, yes. Yes.
But quantum states are by nature discrete.
That's right.
So how can every population of these variational parameters represent a quantum state?
Okay. So when I say quantum states, I really mean, so this state is a parameter by this a lot of complex numbers. So I don't mean the eigenstate or the basis of vector. So in that sense, they are continuous. So they can really rotate continuously in the vector space. Okay, and using so unfortunately the meaning of state is used. Yeah, there's many different meanings of the same word states. So I'm using this. I don't mean this orthogonal basis. Yeah. But here I do want to say one thing is that we can view this a vector in Hilbert space as a point in the phase space. We can view the quantum states as a point in phase space. We can take that point of view. Similarly, these complex numbers just specify a point in the so-called phase space. And the variational parameter in the variational wave function just a submanifold of this big phase space of a quantum system. Yeah. So that's what we try to do here. So therefore, in this variational approach, the variational wave function really gives us a submanifold in the big quantum phase space. And then we try to do our calculation within this submanifold. So this reduction of dimensionality from a huge phase space in quantum system to some submanifold is this semi-classical approximation in some sense. Okay. So that's what we try to do here. So the dynamics, what is dynamics? The dynamics is becoming tricky. So then I remind you that the dynamics is this. In quantum phase space, Lagrangian is I phi n star phi n dot minus this Hamiltonian. I'm sorry, using psi. Hamiltonian is psi n and this m n
delta psi m star. Okay. So so if you view quantum mechanics from a classical point of view, we say we can view this phi n as a parameter in the big quantum phase space. And this is like a phase space Lagrangian. Then the equation motion from this phase space Lagrangian actually gave us Schrodinger equation, actually. By simply doing a variational approach, you can get the functional variation, we can get Schrodinger equation from here. So now, using this variational wave function, the variational parameter, we obtain the sub-manifold of this big quantum phase space. So therefore, we want to obtain a Lagrangian defined on this smaller sub-manifold of the phase space. Then that gives us dynamics. So how do we do that? Well, it's not difficult. First, this Lagrangian have two terms. One is this term. Okay. So this term can easily restrict to the sub-manifold, you know. So that's average energy term. So therefore, so to get the dynamics on this smaller phase space, we just get this average of Hamiltonian. Or with a minus sign. So that's average energy term. And yes?
So we need to choose a parameterization which is just even number of parameters for this to work?
Sometimes you can also have odd number, but odd number is very interesting. And this actually has come up, this issue has come up later. But even is maybe more convenient.
Why is even more convenient?
Because phase space is always even dimensional. And but in a variational parameter, you can choose odd number of variational parameter. If you're facing a situation, you have this phase space with odd dimension, what's the cost analog? Yeah. But let's ignore this difficult, let's always choose even number. Later we'll handle that. And then, yes.
So C1 and C2 are not both coordinates? One is like momentum?
No, they are, we don't know. Those are just parameters, you know. Here we say we have two variational parameters, generically. Mm. And then we try to build some classical analog using two variational parameters. Yes.
So I'm sorry if you mentioned this already, but so site C1, C2 is in general not going to depend linearly on C1, C2?
May not be, yeah. It can be anything. Here, I do very general discussion. Okay. And, but what is this term? Actually, this term, and let's use some direct notation. This term can be written as I, this vector, and d, dt. So that's the, if you use direct notation, this is done. So, but when I restrict my phase space into this smaller one, manifold labeled by C1 to C2, well, this term can be written, this term can be written as a C. But now I want to say that only QC have time dependence. Okay. So what is that? And so this term actually is So let me write that again. So this can be written as a AI, C dot times I here. C I. So this is C I here. And where AI is this one. So this is a function of AI's function of C. So this is a general setup. So this just gave us this AI. So there's a plus AI, which is function of CI, and CI dot. And this may look familiar. You know, this average energy is just a function for Cs. You know, that's just energy. Because function C1, C2. So therefore, the whole thing, let me just replace this by minus H to C1. Just that's average energy for these things. It's function C1, C2. And this looks very familiar. This is so-called a generalized phase space approach. And so this is some similar to this PX dot, but more generalized. And this is just energy HXP. And that's it. So that's general strategy of this variational approach. Okay. And for our particular problem, I really don't have much room. For a particular problem, we can choose okay. So we choose our variational wave function as a following. So let me just do it quickly. We choose this kind of variational wave function. Okay. And so we find this variational Maybe let's do this in next class because this is about the time. And but this is a general variational approach and a classical approach. So I want to emphasize that once we obtain this dynamics in terms of this variational parameter, then we can do the similar trick. This is a classical system. We simplify the class system, mainly make them into harmonic oscillators. And then we re-quantize them again, then obtain the spectrum. Yes?
Does AI have a geometrical interpretation in the figure of which space?
AI, yes. And the AI, again, is like a vector planetary phase space. And it has a since the raises question, it also have a gauge equivalence. Because the gauge equivalence will show you the following. Because once you choose this large wave function, you can just add a phase, e to the I, theta, to C1, to C2. This will be the same wave function can add a phase. And then you should get a similar things. But suddenly, when adding this phase, you don't modify the Hamiltonian. The Hamiltonian is not changed. This function is still the same. So energy is a gauge mark. But when you add an arbitrary function with a function of C1, C2, you do this calculation, AI change. AI just change the exact way. AI go to AI plus partial I d time. So it has very similar gate, the state potential behavior. So at least I will emphasize, I find it quite amazing. This kind of gauge invariance of AI in phase space and the phase ambiguity of quantum wave particle kind of together. This is very different from the other geometrical understanding of a gate invariance of a gate potential, like a Fermi bundle was in the connection. And this connection is really just the quantum wave function has phase ambiguity.
This is more similar to Barry's phase?
Yeah, this is Barry. And this is exactly Barry's phase. So actually, it has a name. So that's why when I look at this phase space Lagrangian, we call this xt dot term. Okay, so sorry, tx dot term. This is like Barry's phase term. Mm-hmm. We usually don't call that Barry's phase. But in this analog, it's became clear that
Tx dot term or something like thing like that are really Barry's phase term from this quantum analog. And then this is a energy term. So therefore, the phase space Hamiltonian, Lagrangian, it's Barry's phase term plus energy term. That gives us phase space Lagrangian. So whenever you have Barry's phase, and then you can get this. The more complicated Barry phase can give you more complicated XP dot term. That gives you generalized Newton dynamics. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So I will stop here. So in the next lecture, we'll finish this. Yeah.
So we'll need tutorials at 2:00. And tomorrow, there will be tutorials.